This episode of the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation, by A.R. Morton. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning how to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up and rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order your copy of Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation.
My name is Andre C. Hatchett, a.k.a. Mr. Own or Be Owned, and I'm encouraging everybody listening to this podcast to pick up my new book, Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America, on Amazon.com. If you're a black man, if you need guidance, inspiration, a path to follow to build wealth in this country, pick it up. Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America.
Welcome to the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast with your host, Charles Oglesby III, a.k.a. Todd Millionaire.
This is the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast, episode 54. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire. I'm the founder and the director of the Thai Capital Investment Club that has over 185, actually, last time I checked, I think it was 189 members. Doing some great things on the stock side of that club, but we're also doing some great things on the real estate side of that club with Todd Acquisitions. Should be closing on property number 2 on Wednesday and closing on property 3 hopefully next week. So just trying to keep it up, keep that 10x action up. I'm doing some great things with Todd Ventures as well. And we have Jamal working on that, helping find and fund your businesses. So if you have an idea, if you have a business plan, pitch that to us. We want to work with you and help you get that off the ground. Thank you all for tuning in. The purpose of this podcast is to share the stories of successful African-American individuals, period. But also investors and business owners. So people can see and hear the stories of successful examples, learn that business and investing are the key to financial success, but also just see great people doing great things. With us, we have Miss Candace Marie. I saw her on Instagram, which is where I see everybody else, which is pretty cool. But her story really stood out to me because she did something that a lot of people are struggling with. And so I wanted to get her on. I wanted to talk about her story. Wanted to kind of hopefully get some tips so that you guys can follow in her path. Because the sooner we can get people out of student loan debt, the more liberated and more successful we can be as a culture and a community. So with that, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Cool. And so you paid off how much in debt again?
I paid off $47,000, like $453 worth of debt.
Wow. And how long did that take you to do?
Well, I graduated in 2011 from college, and then I just became debt-free last December 2017. Nice. So it's about 6 years. But I didn't get serious about paying off my debt until 2015. So
2015. Cool. So we're going to work all the way up there. I kind of want to learn more about you and the makeup of you so that we can get a better understanding of your whole process. So where did you grow up and where did you go to school?
Yep. So I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. And then after I graduated high school, I went to RIT, so Rochester Institute of Technology in upstate New York. While I was there, I majored in new media design and imaging and a minor in communications.
Cool. And so then after you left college, then where'd you go from there?
So after I left college, it took me a little while to find a job. Like, I didn't have a job for like 6 or 7 months. You know, it was hard for me. And I thought it was going to be easy. You know, when you go to college, I don't feel like sometimes they prepare you for that journey. So I was applying for a bunch of jobs. Finally, I ended up landing a job, but it wasn't what I expected. There was no benefits really. So, and then I was only making like $30,000 a year. And then he's like, nobody here is rolling up in a Porsche. You know, everybody starts off with the same salary. So I didn't have any health, dental, nothing. But it was better than zero. So I was happy for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that in college, they kind of sell the dream.
Yeah, they do.
I was talking to my friend and they were saying they make it seem as though you leave college and you just walk into six figures.
Exactly.
And the reality is it's a little bit different. It's still, I'm still super pro college, super pro education, but You got to kind of have reasonable expectations.
Yeah. I didn't even think like six figures. I was like at least 60,000, but then it was like, nope, here's your 30,000. Yeah.
What did your life look like from that current job to where you are kind of now? What did that transition period look like?
So I was at that current job for only maybe like 6 months I was there before I got let go, because it was a small company, maybe like 6 or 7 employees, and they didn't have enough money for 2 in designers. So then I was out again, jobless, you know, trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? So I had to like do some freelance design work while still applying for other jobs. So that's what I did. And then eventually I ended up getting a job at an ad agency. So I was there at the agency for like 5 years. So while I'm there, I wasn't really focused on paying off my debt. It was mostly about investing at first, because I knew that I wanted to have a positive net worth. And I think sometimes that's a mistake that people make. They're just like so focused on paying off all of their debt, and then they're debt free, and then they have $0, and they have 0 investments, they have 0 in savings. And I didn't really want that.
That's dope. I like that a lot. I always tell people that, like, you don't necessarily have to get out of your debt before you start investing. A lot of people, like the Dave Ramsey's, they tell you get debt free and then invest. And yeah. What I always tell people is, like, your investments help you become debt free. Yeah, you want to go all in, you want to pay your debts off, but you got to build the house as well.
Exactly. And I think for me, I started tracking my net worth in like May of 2015. So I'm getting into the habit of tracking my net worth every month. I feel like that helped me stay focused, because at first I had a negative net worth. And so once I saw that it was negative, I was like, okay, what's the fastest way for me to get into the positives? And it was really just like focusing on investing more money before I started really tackling the debt.
So what were you using to track your net worth?
I was just using Excel. In the beginning, yeah, just using Excel, like every month, just tracking how much debt I have, how much I have in investments and savings. But now I use Excel and I have personal capital now, but before it was just Excel.
That's cool. And so you said you started investing. What kind of investments were you doing in the beginning?
In the beginning, it was mostly just like my 401k. You know, I made sure to sign up and get the company match, and then doing a little bit more than that. So I was investing like 9% of my salary into like my 401k. And then I opened up an individual brokerage account. And then I opened up like a Roth IRA. So I had like those three that I was investing in.
So you were kind of chunking your investments and your savings and building up that nest egg. Is that what was going on there?
Yeah, that's what was going on. Because like in the beginning, I wasn't really focused on being debt free.
So when that focus shifted, what was the motivation behind you going from, I mean, because if you did it in, it seems like 2-3 years, you had to become really aggressive. And I think there was some motivation behind that. What switched? What changed?
I think like just hanging out with other personal finance bloggers and seeing them paying off their debt. And I was just like, oh, maybe I should pay off my debt too. But paying off my debt alone was kind of boring. So then I created like my own debt challenge with my audience. And so it was like me, and I reached out to 9 other members on my email list at the time. And I was like, I'm doing this debt challenge. Like everybody, if you pay a small fee to join, and then at the end of 11 weeks, like the winner gets like $500. And so like every week they're sending me their screenshots of the debt. And then at the end of the 11 weeks, we ended up paying off $39,500 worth of debt collectively. And then one person even became debt free. And yeah. And then one person won the pot of the $500.
That's cool, because I'm a huge proponent of teamwork. Mm-hmm. And it seems like what you guys did is you kind of like, of course, you create the accountability partners that are there and built into that community. But it's like you guys work together to pay off that debt, even if you're not paying off each other's debt. But It's so hard to do anything by yourself.
It is.
Especially if people in your inner circle, like they're spending, they're buying the newest J's, they're going
on
vacations. It's like it's hard to be that odd man out. So it's like you went, you probably created a community of people who are deferring that gratification to the actual goal. And so you're not the odd man out.
Exactly. I think that's an important piece because like growing up, I feel like my focus was just on like consuming, you know, buying the sneakers and the jewelry and the clothes. Yeah. And then when I started kind of switching my circle, then it became more about my personal finances. So that's a good point.
It's funny because like I always tell people like we're competitive people. And so like you want to be around this right circle. So you're competing amongst the right things. So It's like you guys over there trying to be the fastest person to pay off your debt. Not like the person who's the fastest to get whatever's new and hot.
Yeah.
And so Like you're still competing, you're still grinding, you're still hustling towards a goal. It's just a more lucrative goal. So what is the first thing that you did when you decided that you were going to pay off your debt?
The first thing that I did is I got rid of my credit card debt, because that was the debt that had the highest interest. Mm-hmm. So and like the smallest balance compared to my student loans. I was like, let me knock out the credit card debt first and like create that win for myself.
And so what was the strategy for attacking the credit card debt? Did you pay off the highest interest rate first or the lowest balance first?
No, I did the snowball. So I was focusing on the debt with the lowest balance first.
Yeah, I find that that's like the best way. I've had to do that twice.
Yeah.
Right now I'm like no credit cards, but like The first time I did, that's exactly how I did it. It's like you just start at the small one, just build up. And it's like Rafi says, you get those small wins.
Exactly. Whereas
a lot of people think they need to tackle the credit card with the highest interest rate, and you'll struggle. And then it's like, maybe you get it paid off, maybe you don't. But it's like, I just find that that's the best way, and it's worked for me.
Yeah, me too. Because I know a lot of people are like, well, I'm losing all this money in interest. And I'm like, I know. But at the same time, for me, I'm just about like the small win for myself.
And the crazy part about it is, as it relates to your credit score, like an account is an account, really. Mm-hmm. So it's like if you pay off a smaller account, that's a better account. It's still a zero balance as opposed to paying off the bigger account. I don't know if that's like true for you, but if you get that one account paid off and you move to the second one, you get that paid off. Like now you have two accounts paid off. Even if it's not the biggest account, it's an account. So what mistakes did you make when you were going through your debt pay down process?
The mistakes. I think in the beginning, the mistake I made was just trying to do too much with my extra money left over at the end of the month. Like I was trying, like, you know, when you have so many different goals that you're trying to reach and you only have so much money, it's like you put in these little drops of money into each goal instead of just focusing on one or two of them and then putting the majority of your money into those one to two goals. Because before I was doing the debt snowball method, I feel like I was just trying to put a little bit extra towards all my debt. And so like, I feel like I wasn't making as much progress.
That makes sense. So it's like, instead of putting that on a bunch of individual accounts, just put it all onto that one account.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just paying the minimum and everything else.
Have you ever read the book, The One Thing?
I have. I haven't finished it, but yeah, I've read some of it.
I did it on audiobook, so it kind of just pushed through it through audiobook. So what are some things you did right that you're most proud of when you're paying off your debt?
For me, I think the thing that I did right was like focusing on investing in the beginning rather than just putting like every dime I had towards my debt. And I think today's day and age in this like microwave generation, I like to call it, like everyone is so focused on like, well, how fast did you pay off your debt, right? Like it's like, oh, I paid off $90,000 in 24 months, you know? So it might not sound like a sexy story, but it's still, it was important for me to have a positive net worth and not starting off from zero once my debt was paid off. So I think that was the thing that I did right, was focusing more on investments, not like neglecting my investments.
Are you still investing now, like in the stock market and in your brokerage account, all that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's like I have like more money to devote to these accounts since I don't have like that debt payment, which is nice.
And do you feel like since you had that experience investing that you're a better investor now?
I don't know if it's better. I just feel like it's just like a habit that I have. So maybe it's not, I don't know if I think about it as being better. It's just like something that I've built the habit of into doing.
That's why I'm a big proponent of like investing now, because it's like you get into the habit, you start establishing good practices, and what's really going to happen is like, yeah, the debt is one thing, but the people that come after you are going to inherit what you invest in, what you buy and what you acquire. You don't want to leave that burden of debt on somebody, but like, not only are you paying off the debt, but now you're going to be able to teach whomever else comes after you the habit of investing. And I think that's super important, because it's like you have to build as much as you try to kind of like demolish your debt. And I think I said that early in this story. So I think that's really cool, because I mean, I don't know if you know this, Mike, but I'm like super huge on investing, especially in like stock market and all that good stuff. So it's kind of cool to hear that you did both.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I had like an older cousin who was kind of like took me under his wing, because I feel like in the beginning, everyone's telling you how to invest, but nobody was telling you how to do it. So you're like, oh yeah, I want to invest my money, but like, how do I do it? And then you read these books and they're like boring and there's all these complicated words. You're like, okay, I don't know how to do this. But yeah, luckily I had like an older cousin that was kind of like guiding me, like, okay, you should buy these. This is why. And when I was procrastinating or dragging my feet, he'd be like, look, Candace, do you want to eat filet mignon or do you want to eat oatmeal? Like, the choice is yours.
So what are you investing in now?
Well, right now, since I'm like an entrepreneur, I think like the most recent account that I opened up was like a solo 401k. So like now I don't really do too much like individual stocks. I'm mostly just into like mutual funds. I have a lot. One of my accounts now is with like Vanguard. Like now I just kind of keep it simple. Like, yeah, I just try to keep everything simple. Even though I do still have my individual stocks, like I'm mostly focusing on like the Vanguard mutual funds.
So you're fully self-employed now, or self-employed?
Yeah, I am. That's fully cool. Self-employed now. So just still like learning and growing in my business. And I'm also like studying for my, to have my CFP. So I'm like studying and working for myself.
So let's talk about your business. What kind of business do you run and own?
So I have Young Yet Wise, which is a personal finance blog. So I have a monthly membership there where I keep women accountable to reaching their money goals. I also do like money coaching. So I have clients that reach out to me to help them with their finances. And then I also have a design business. So I help small business owners with the graphics for their brand.
That's cool. That's cool. And so when did you decide to take that leap from working full time? And how did you position yourself to leave and go full time self-employed?
Well, I was pushed into self-employment. I lost my job last January. So I was coming back from vacation and I was kind of already wanting to leave. I was telling myself, I'm just going to save up money. So I had a savings account called like Live Life on My Own Terms. That was the name of my fund. And I was just like saving up money. I'm like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to quit on this day. And then, you know, sometimes you just don't quit. And I actually, I had a dream that I was going to get fired before my quit date, and it actually ended up coming true. So once they let me go, this is like the second time I got let go from a job. So I was like, you know what? I'm just like betting on everybody else. You know, why not bet on myself this time? So it's been like 1 year now that I've been for myself. I mean, it is scary, you know, because you are used to like that consistent income coming in. Yeah, now you're like, everything is on me.
So In the beginning, what did those early years look like, or the early months look like? How were you getting clients? What were you doing to bring money in the door?
In the beginning, so since I've had my blog, like in that last October, I was going to FinCon. I feel like FinCon really plays a big part, which is like a personal finance conference that I go to every year, because just seeing like what's possible from everybody else. Like there was a lot of my friends who are already entrepreneurs and already working for themselves. And so I had did like a challenge, like, can you make $1,000 on the side of your 9-to-5? So that October, when they had the challenge, I had made like $900 on the side of my 9-to-5. I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. I made $900 extra outside of my paycheck. Mm-hmm. But I think since I was like growing that income on the side of my 9-to-5, when I had to leave, my brain was already used to finding ways to make money. So it was like, okay, yeah, now I have the coaching. Now I have my membership. Now I'm doing affiliates. And, you know, people were paying me to manage their social media accounts. So it was just like all these different ways to make money, especially with the internet. You have access to everyone.
This is Ken Morris, the CEO and founder of Multibex, the private equity investment firm, and the creator of the brand Lord of My Land, the Alpha Gentleman Entrepreneur. And I am a proud supporter of Tide Capital. You can find me on Instagram at Lord of My Land and at The Lord Ken.
This is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, host of the Millionaire Podcast, and I'm the founder and the director of the Todd Capital Investment Club that now has over 200 members, Todd Acquisitions, which is our crowdfunded real estate firm, and Todd Ventures, our crowdfunded venture capital firm. I am formally inviting you to join one of our many investment clubs. If you are someone who is new to investing, a seasoned investor, or someone who doesn't even know what investing is, we know that you will learn the key to investing and how to build generational wealth through the use of crowdfunding by working with our team. Email info@capitaltodd.com to join today. The next question is, what are some influences that push you on your journey?
Definitely FinCon, the conference, and just being surrounded by other entrepreneurs who are like way ahead of me, just showing me like what is even possible. Because had I not even gone to those conferences, I wouldn't even have known that people were out here working for themselves or people were out here paying off their debt. So I definitely think my circle. I think the first book that I read really about money was A Millionaire by 30 by Corey Allen.
The green book, right?
Yeah, it was like green and white. And so he actually graduated debt-free. His parents helped him pay for college, but he just started buying real estate. So he was only making like $38,000 from his job. Then he saved up, like he was living super frugal, where like ramen noodles was too expensive for him, you know? And when his friends was out partying or like going on lavish vacations, he's like going at the thrift store trying to buy furniture for his place. They're like, what are you doing? Why don't you just get the nice furniture? He's like, no, I can't, because I'm saving for my next place. Mm-hmm. But eventually he was able to become a millionaire by 30. And I liked it because every month he was kind of tracking his net worth. And so that's when I was kind of learning more about the accounts. I was like, oh, he has a Roth IRA. Like, what is that? And then I'd go like research, what's a Roth IRA? I'm like, oh, maybe I need one of these. Yeah. So I think that was definitely played a part. I also like the book You Only Live Once by Jason Vitug. I thought that was a good book just because it's not just about, yes, there's like personal finances, but it's also about like long-term, what do you want to do with your life? Like, how do you want to structure your life? Not just about save, pay off debt. It's like, what do you want your life to look like? And that's why finances is important, because you're trying to get to this life that you want to live. Yeah. So that was another good book. Yeah, I think those are the two books and, you know, my circle.
Cool. So I think you mentioned lifestyle and frugality and all of that stuff, things that I'm really big on. I don't talk about them much on this show. I talk about them a ton on my blog. But I was curious what your lifestyle looked like during those 2 years where you really went all in on paying off your debt. What did you cut back on? What did you forego?
Yeah.
And also, what does your life look like now that you're on the other side of that debt?
When I was paying off my debt, you know, the sacrifice I made, like I had to move back home. After college, I was still at home because I didn't have a job. So, you know, I had to go home. I had to pay rent, but it's not like I'm paying $2,000 a month in my rent. You know, it's like it's cheaper. And I also didn't have a car. So I didn't have any car, monthly car payments. I'm using public transportation to get around while I'm in Boston. So I think a lot of people, when they're doing their budgets, they overspend in like their housing, transportation, and food, you know? So I feel like if you can find ways to cut back in those three areas, like you're already going to be ahead of everybody else.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's definitely huge. So I was just like, okay, if I can keep my expenses as low as possible, then I can have more money to go towards my debt and more money to go towards my other goals. And especially as being an entrepreneur, because I knew eventually I did want to work for myself. I'm like, okay, let me pay off this debt so that I don't have this extra expense hanging over my head. You know, it's like I can focus on other things besides just paying someone else.
I think one of the crazy things about it is everybody's struggling with debt. Everybody's struggling with student loans. Everybody gets out of school. And what we like to do is we like to kind of take the Bernie Sanders approach when I have to say, well, they should give away free college, or, oh, well, do away with everybody's student loan debts. But I think a good idea really would just be doing what you did, is going home for a year, 2 years, and cutting out those 2 years of student loan debts. You can do it in 2 years if you just sacrifice that freedom.
And I think people don't want to do that because, you know, they're like, you know, I was living like a college student, you know, now I'm out of college and I feel like I should be free because I deserve this lifestyle. Like we get into this, like, I deserve. But the longer you can still live like a college student, like, I feel like the faster you'll be able to reach your goals.
I think that deserve mentality is a huge misconception. It's kind of like the belief that you're going to walk into $60,000 after college. Like, I think we have to kind of let people know, like, yeah, you're going to get through school. Yeah, you're going to graduate. And then you're going to go and live home for 2 years, 3 years. And the crazy part about it is we don't talk about that enough. A lot of people who have kind of won are people who have lived at home. Like, a lot of people don't know that, like, Barack and Michelle lived at home. And so, like, unfortunately, it's a stigma. And we always try to, like, to my mom, like, we always want people to, like, grow up and be individuals. Like, why don't we tell them to grow up and be successful? And so it's like, you don't leave the home when you're 18. You leave the home when you're successful. When you don't have student loan debts. When you can successfully get out and take care of yourself and you're successful, not just like scraping by, struggling, because that's the surest way to end up right back home. What I found is like the best time to work is when you don't have to work. Own these rental properties. That's kind of my goal because, I mean, I've lost jobs too. And it's like my number one fear is somebody being able to decide my fate by just walking in the door and saying, hey, you got to go.
So, that's like, the worst feeling.
It's like you have to hustle up and you have to get these rental properties that are going to be your cash flow to kind of hold you up in the time that, like, you never know. It's like, I'd rather lose a job and I have like $3,000 coming in a month to take care of my bills regardless. Like, I'm not just going to, you don't just like retire and don't do anything. You get the cash flow and you still get back to work. You don't just get lazy and start taking vacations and everything.
Yeah, no, real estate is definitely like a goal of mine eventually. I'm like, I think it's awesome having like multiple streams of income that way. Yeah. So
another way that you can do it for people who are listening is like, you don't necessarily have to live at home with your parents. You can also buy a multifamily property and house hack it, or you can buy a single family house and house hack that. And so people who don't know what house hacking is, it's where you basically turn your primary residence into a rental property. So, I mean, we've had a lot of people on the show who have done that, who have house hacked their way to financial freedom, where they bought a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex, lived in one, rented out the other three, and got paid to live for free. So,
yeah, I think that's awesome. But I also sometimes feel like in the personal finance community, people are afraid of debt. And so sometimes people are shocked to hear me say, oh yeah, I'm debt free. But next time I do want to get an investment property, and they're like, wait, but you're debt free. Like, what do you mean you want to get into more debt? Because people are afraid.
But I think that two things, I don't know if you believe in the concept of good debt versus bad debt. But I mean, there's the debt that paid you and there's the debt that you pay. And so, I mean, that's one point there. But the other downside is I kind of hear them on, like, I mean, because we buy a lot of our properties in cash. And so, like, today was the last day for the tenant to pay the rent. And she didn't tell me that she paid the rent. I just looked in the account and it was there because she just deposits in our account. Yeah, if she pays, that's cool. Like, hooray, we don't have to evict her. But if she doesn't pay, at least we know there's no mortgage. So it's like, we're not over here like worried that we're going to go into default. We can't pay our bills because we bought it in cash. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, I think that there's still a way to kind of do the rental property thing and take advantage of the cash flow without doing the debt. Because, I mean,
you bought a house in cash? Man, that's amazing.
So in certain regards, I'm kind of afraid of the debt aspect too. So I can kind of understand that. It's just, I think you just have to be smart and strategic about it, whatever you decide to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. Now I feel like I'm interviewing you. I'm like, how long did it take you to get that cash for that property?
So the crazy part about it is we work with a group. And so it's not just me, it's other people that are investing. And then now we're looking to get the next one and the next one and the next one. And so it's like I told you, it's like you can use your group to pay down debt. You can use your group to invest on a larger scale.
Okay.
And the cool thing about that is now what we're stepping into is now we're looking at larger properties. So we're looking at 8-plexes, 16-plexes. Mm-hmm. But since we've kind of demonstrated a track record of doing what we do successfully, now we can approach the NFL players or the soccer players. And yeah. Kind of made contacts with through the investment club that's exposed to people who are willing to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars into something that's going to cash flow. It's kind of like a syndication, if you're familiar.
Oh, that's awesome.
So this is what I call questions from the crowd. First question is, did you pay your loans while they're in deferment?
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't have a job. I didn't have a job till like 6 or 7 months after college, so I didn't pay them off. Mm-hmm. And then once I lost my first job, I had to actually pause my student loans. Mm-hmm. So I paused them. So no, I didn't. But I feel like it would have been a smart idea to have paid it while I was in deferment.
I think the coolest thing about your story, and this is taken away from the fire round aspect of it, that your story is not perfect. It's not like you graduated, you're an engineer, you walked into this six-figure job,
yep.
And then you lived at home, and then you paid off everything. You kind of did what you needed to do, and in 2 years, you kind of got focused. So it's like somebody tomorrow can decide that they want to get focused, and they can do exactly what you did.
Yep, very true.
Yeah, I have a question, though. If you had a job, but were you also bringing in that side income, and did that side income help you pay off the loans?
Yeah, so I feel like I did have the 9-to-5, and I did have a side income coming in. But I feel like as I was growing, like towards the end of my employment, that's when the income was like kind of growing more. But had I not had even started a blog or knew about a ways to side hustle, I feel like it definitely would have been more of a struggle for me. Because like if I had just lost my job and now I'm like, okay, where am I going to get my next income? Like if I wasn't really familiar with like the online world and it's even possible to make money outside of my 9-to-5, I feel like it would have been hard for me to bring in that money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason why I ask is because I'm a huge proponent of using your skills that you learn on your job mm-hmm. outside of your job as a consultant. And you can bring in a ton of more money, which will allow you to pay off your debt. And what I tell people is then you get to sell yourself at your market rate as opposed to your wage rate, which there's a gap because it's like your market rate is what the firm bills you out at. Your wage is what they pay you. The gap is what they take home. When you work as a consultant, you get the big bucks. You can charge somebody $250 for an hour of your work as mm-hmm. opposed to $30 for an hour of your work.
It's true. Yeah. And I actually seen that, like that markup on, like for my, when I was working at the job, I got to see like what the company was taking and then what they were giving me. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm not really getting much of anything.
Age of the internet, like it really, I know a model who, what he does is instead of going through an agency, he'll go on Instagram and DM the labels he wants to work with and they'll book him directly. And so he'll make more money that way as opposed to an agent, something that it's like it lets you skip the middleman. So if people aren't taking advantage of DMs, take advantage of DMs. It's the craziest.
Yeah, take advantage of it. Yeah, definitely.
So much power in the DMs. Man. All right. So back to the fire round. Did you consolidate your loans?
No, I didn't consolidate. In the beginning, I didn't really know even about loan consolidation. All I knew was just, this is your debt and you just have to pay it off.
And so we already know the answer to this question, but the question was, did you start paying right away?
No, just the minimum balance that I was paying until 2015.
So you were paying the minimum amount due and then at a certain time you just started hustling it up?
I only deferred it when I lost my job. That was the only time I kind of like paused it. So I got income coming in consistently again. But then after that, the minimum payment until 2015, and then I was paying like thousands or $800 and then $1,200 this month, you know, just trying to put as much as possible towards it.
So we know this question is how long did it take? And we said about 2 years, right?
Yep. So for 2015, then I just paid it off in December of 2017.
So they want to know, how did you keep it affordable? And I think what this question means is like, how did you manage to live and still pay off of your debts?
Yeah, it just comes back to keeping your expenses as low as possible. Moving back home, like I didn't have to pay $2,000 a month in rent. I don't own a car, so I didn't have a car payment or paying for insurance. My food, I mean, I wasn't like super frugal, like eating ramen noodles, and I was still taking vacations. So I don't think that I don't really consider myself a super frugal person. I just think cutting back on the big expenses helped me be able to use that money towards my debt.
Interesting. So it's like if you cut out the housing, you cut out the car note, then you can pretty much still have a lifestyle and pay off your debt at the same time.
And finding ways to make like extra money too.
I think what's really cool about this show is we only really talk to people who are successful. And when you listen to multiple shows, you start hearing similar patterns. You hear about people who cut down on their expenses. You start hearing about people who have deferred gratification, all of those things. And so what I always say is like, if you're operating outside of those, then it's like a foregone conclusion. So it's like, if you're operating outside of the principles that you hear on this show, then unfortunately you might not be as successful as the guest on this show. But if you just follow that path that we've laid out for you, that people are experiencing and sharing, and success is also a foregone conclusion. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
So this question is, when it got tough, what kept you consistent?
I couldn't really see it as like a sacrifice. And a lot of people sometimes use that word with debt, but I just had to think about it as like my future self thanking me later, you know, like just seeing my future self being happy with the choices that I made to get me there today. I lost my dad in 2016. So that was one obstacle. So I think that was kind of something that like kept me going as well. Just because like towards the end of his life, it was more so about like the relationships he built and just like how he wished he would have done more things. Like, I wish I would have traveled. I wish I would have better relationships. I wish I would have, you know, started that business. So kind of like keeping him in mind, it was just like kind of kept me going to reaching my goals, any goal that I set for myself. So, and also making sure that I still had fun money in my budget. Because when I did the challenge, I didn't have any kind of fun money. And so like at the end of the 11 weeks, I was miserable. Like I just booked a vacation because I didn't have any fun. And I was just like, I'm going to Aruba by myself 2 weeks from now and I don't even care. So I think it's sometimes dangerous when you're putting everything and you're not giving yourself any kind of wiggle room to have fun at all. So
very cool. Last two questions. What is your favorite book?
Oh, Tuesdays with Maury. That's one of my favorite books.
Interesting. Interesting. The last question is, what does wealth mean to you?
You know, just being able to live life on your terms, you know, I think that's what my definition of wealth is.
I like it. Before we go, where can they find out more about you?
Yes, you guys can find me on youngyetwise.com. And I'm also on Instagram at youngyetwise, but the E is a three.
E is a three. This is episode 54. The title of this show is How I Paid Off $47,000 in Student Loans in 2 Years. We had a great guest in Candace Marie. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
If you guys want to join any of our investment clubs, you can always email us at info@capitaltide.com. The website is capitaltide.com. Again, this is episode 54. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, signing off.